The main gate was lightweight and standing wide open, and there was no sentry post next to it. It was just a gate. Beyond it, the lot was about half full of parked cars. Negley paused to let a photocopier truck out and then drove in and put the Mustang in a visitor slot near the entrance lobby. She and Reacher got out and stood for a moment. It was the middle of the morning, and the air was warm and heavy. The neighborhood was quiet. It sounded like a whole lot of people were concentrating very hard, or else no one was doing very much of anything. The reception entrance had a shallow step up to double glass doors that opened for them automatically and admitted them to a large, square lobby that had a slate floor and aluminum walls. There were leather chairs and a long reception counter in back. Behind the counter was a blonde woman of about 30. She was wearing a corporate polo shirt with New Age Defense Systems embroidered above her small left breast. Clearly, she had heard the doors open, but she waited until Reacher and Negley were halfway across the floor before she looked up.
"Can I help you?" she asked.
"We're here to see Tony Swan," Reacher said. The woman smiled automatically and asked,
"May I know your names?"
"Jack Reacher and Francis Negley. We were good friends of his in the service."
"Then please take a seat."
The woman picked up her desk phone, and Reacher and Negley stepped away to the leather chairs. Negley sat down, but Reacher stayed on his feet. He watched the dull aluminum reflection of the woman on the phone and heard her say,
"Two friends of Tony Swan to see him?"
Then she put the phone down and smiled in Reacher's direction, even though he wasn't looking directly at her. Then the lobby went quiet. It stayed quiet for about 4 minutes, and then Reacher heard the click of shoes on slate from a corridor that entered the lobby to the side of and behind the desk. A measured stride, no hurry, a person of medium height and medium weight. He watched the mouth of the corridor and saw a woman step into view. About 40 years old, slim, brown hair stylishly cut. She was in a tailored black pantsuit and a white blouse. She looked swift and efficient, and had an open and welcoming expression on her face. She smiled a token thank you to the receptionist and walked straight past her toward Reacher and Negley, held out her hand and said,
"I'm Margaret Berenson."
Negley stood up, and she and Reacher said their names and shook hands with her. Up close, she had old, looping car crash scars under her makeup and the chilly breath of a big-time gum chewer. She was wearing decent jewelry, but no wedding band. "We're looking for Tony Swan," Reacher said.
"I know. Let's find somewhere to talk."
One of the aluminum wall panels was a door that led to a small, rectangular conference room directly off the lobby. Clearly, it was designed for discussions with visitors who didn't merit admission into the inner sanctums. It was a cool, spare space with a table and four chairs and floor-to-ceiling windows that gave directly onto the parking lot. The front bumper of Negley's Mustang was about 5 feet away.
"I'm Margaret Berenson," the woman said again. "I'm New Age's Human Resources Director. I'll get straight to the point, which is that Mr. Swan isn't with us anymore."
Reacher asked, "Since when?"
"A little over 3 weeks ago,"
Berenson said. "What happened?"
"I'd feel more comfortable talking about it if I knew for sure you have a connection with him. Anyone can walk up to a reception counter and claim to be old friends."
"I'm not sure how we could prove it."
"What did he look like?"
"About 5'9" tall and about 5'8" wide." Berenson smiled.
"If I told you he used a piece of stone as a paperweight, could you tell me where that piece of stone came from?"
"The Berlin Wall," Reacher said. "He was in Germany when it came down. I saw him there just afterward. He took the train up and got himself a souvenir, and it's concrete, not stone. There's a trace of graffiti on it."
Berenson nodded. "That's the story I heard, and that's the object I've seen."
"So what happened?" Reacher asked. "He quit?" Berenson shook her head.
"Not exactly. We had to let him go. Not just him. You have to understand, this is a new company. It was always speculative, and there was always risk. In terms of our business plan, we're not where we want to be. Not yet, anyway. So we reached the stage where we had to revise our staffing levels. Downward, unfortunately. We operated a last-in, first-out policy, and basically that meant we had to let the whole assistant management level go. I lost my own assistant director. Mr. Swan was assistant director of security, so unfortunately the policy swept him away too. We were very sorry to see him go, because he was a real asset. If things pick up, we'll beg him to come back. But I'm sure he'll have secured another position by then.
Reacher glanced through the window at the half-empty parking lot, listened to the quiet of the building. It sounded half-empty, too.
Okay, he said.
Not okay,
Negley said.
I've been calling his office over and over for the last 3 days, and every time I was told he had just stepped out for a minute, that doesn't add up.
Berenson nodded again.
That's a professional courtesy that I insist upon. With this caliber of management, it would be a disaster for an individual if his personal network of contacts heard the news secondhand. Much better if Mr. Swan can inform people himself directly. Then he can spin it however he wants. So I insist that the remaining secretarial staff tell little white lies during the readjustment period. I don't apologize for it, but I do hope you understand. It's the least I can do for the people we've lost. If Mr. Swan can approach a new employer as if it were a voluntary move, he's in a far better position than if everyone knew he'd been let go from here.
Negley thought about it for a moment, and then she nodded.
Okay, I can see your point. Especially in Mr. Swan's case,
Berenson said.
We all liked him, very much. What about the ones you didn't like? There weren't any. We would never hire people we didn't believe in.
Reacher said, I called Swan and nobody answered at all. Berenson nodded again, still patient and professional.
We had to cut the secretarial pool, too. The ones we kept on are covering 5 or 6 phones each. Sometimes they can't get to every call.
So what's up with your business plan?
I really can't discuss that in detail. But I'm sure you understand. You were in the army.
We both were.
Then you know how many new weapon systems work straight out of the gate.
Not many.
Not any. Ours is taking a little longer than we hoped.
What kind of a weapon is it?
I really can't discuss that.
Where is it made?
Right here.
Reacher shook his head. No, it isn't. You got a fence a 3-year-old could walk through, and no guard shack at the gate and an unsecured lobby. Tony Swan wouldn't have let you get away with that if anything sensitive was happening here.
I really can't comment on our procedures.
Who was Swan's boss?
Our director of security. He's a retired LAPD lieutenant.
And you kept him and let Swan go? Your last-in, first-out policy didn't do you any favors there.
They're all great people, the ones who stayed and the ones who went. We hated making the cut, but it was an absolute necessity.
2 minutes later, Reacher and Negley were back in the Mustang, sitting in New Age's parking lot, engine idling to run the air, with the full scope of the disaster plain to both of them.
Really bad timing, Reacher said.
Suddenly Swan is at loose ends. Franz calls him with a problem. What else is Swan going to do? He's going to run right over there. It's 20 minutes down the road.
He'd have gone anyway, unemployed or not.
They all would. And I guess they all did.
So are they all dead now?
Hope for the best, plan for the worst.
You got what you wanted, Reacher. It's just the two of us.
I didn't want it for these reasons.
I just can't believe it. All of them?
Someone's going to pay.
You think? We've got nothing. We've got one last chance with a password, which by definition will be too nervous to take.
The This is no kind of a time to be getting nervous.
So tell me what to type.
Reacher said nothing. They retraced their route through the surface streets. Nagley drove in silence, and Reacher pictured Tony Swan making the same drive more than 3 weeks earlier. Maybe with the contents of his New Age desk boxed up in his trunk, his pens and pencils and his chip of Soviet concrete, on his way to help his old buddy. Other old buddies pouring in down spokes of an invisible wheel. Sanchez and Orozco hustling over from Vegas on the 15. O'Donnell and Dixon coming in on planes from the East Coast, toting luggage, taking taxis, assembling, meeting and greeting, running into some kind of a brick wall. Then their images faded away, and he was alone again with Nagley in the car. Just the two of us. Facts were to be faced, not fought. Nagley left the car with the Beverly Wilshire valets, and they entered the lobby from the rear, through the crooked corridor. They rode up in the elevator, in silence. Nagley used her key and pushed open her door. Then she stopped dead. Because sitting in her chair by the window, reading Calvin Franz's autopsy report, was a man in a suit. Tall, fair, aristocratic, relaxed. David O'Donnell. Chapter 17. O'Donnell looked up, somber.
I was going to inquire as to the meaning of all those rude and abusive messages on my answering machine.
Then he raised the autopsy report, an explanatory gesture.
But now I understand.
Nagley asked, how did you get in here?
O'Donnell just said, oh, please.
Where the hell were you? Reacher asked.
I was in New Jersey, O'Donnell said. My sister was sick.
How sick?
Very sick.
Did she die?
No, she recovered.
Then you should have been here days ago.
Thanks for your concern.
We were worried, Nagley said. We thought they got you, too.
O'Donnell nodded.
You should be worried. You should stay worried. It's a worrying situation.
I had to wait 4 hours for a flight. I used the time making calls. No answer from Franz, obviously. Now I know why, of course. No answer from Swan or Dixon or Orozco or Sanchez either. My conclusion was that one of them had gotten all the others together and they had run into a problem. Not you or Reacher, because you're too busy in Chicago. And who the hell could ever find Reacher? And not me, because I was temporarily off the grid in New Jersey.
I wasn't too busy, Nagley said. How could anyone think that? I'd have dropped everything and come running.
O'Donnell nodded again. At first, that was the only thing that gave me hope. I figured they would have called you.
So why didn't they? Don't they like me? If they hated you, they'd still have called you.
Without you, it would have been like fighting with one hand behind their backs. Who would do that voluntarily? But in the end, it's perception that counts, not reality. You're very high grade now compared to the rest of us. I think they might have hesitated with you. Maybe until it was too late.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying that one of them, and now I see that it would have been Franz, was in trouble, and he called all of us that he perceived as readily available, which excluded you and Reacher by definition, and me also by bad luck, because I wasn't where I normally am.
That's how we saw it, too. Except you're a bonus. Your sister being sick was a stroke of luck for us. And for you, maybe.
But not for her.
Stop whining, Reacher said. She's alive, isn't she?
Nice to see you, too, O'Donnell said. After all these years.
How did you get in here? Nagley asked. O'Donnell shifted in his seat and took a switchblade from one coat pocket and a set of brass knuckles from the other.
A guy who can get these through airport security can get into a hotel room, believe me.
How did you get those through an airport?
My secret,
O'Donnell said. Ceramic, Reacher said. They don't make them anymore, because they don't set the metal detector off.
Ah, correct,
O'Donnell said. No metal at all, apart from the switchblade spring, which is still steel. But that's very small.